They grew me inside of my mother, which was unusual because she was dead. I developed in a darkness that was not the eager swaddle of her enveloping organs, a heat that was not the heat of her heart-pumped blood. My mother's life burst like a fruit in its fecundity, and it was only after, once she was rotted and hollow and still, that I was born. She had been keeping me a secret, so you can imagine my father's response when the doctor approached him to discuss the viability of the fetus.
The fetus?
I can picture Peter in this moment, face rendered expressionless by shock and grief, socks likely sagging and mismatched under his pant legs. He had been jolted out of an idyllic and coddled existence by the sudden collapse of my mother, and it would be years before he truly grasped that fact.
There must be. I'm afraid I don't. It seems strange to even be discussing given the recentness of your wife's pregnancy, but in this case the circumstances do appear to be miraculous. Miraculous,
I am told Peter repeated, swaying slightly in the saccharine light of the emergency waiting room. He was steadied by a kindly gray-haired woman who had witnessed the scene and risen from her hard-backed chair to help him. This was Mrs. Blott. Within 32 hours, her own husband, one Harold T. Blott, aged 67, would be pronounced dead from cardiac arrest. Mrs. Blott did not yet know this. She patted Peter's back and said,
"There, there, my dear. It seems you've had a shock."
And led him to a vacant chair before turning to address the doctor.
"Please, continue."
The doctor scratched his temple. Behind him, the hospital doors continued to swing as his colleagues rushed from one patient to the next. Peter could hear the high-pitched beeps of the medical machines and smell the iodine.
"Yes," said the doctor. "Right. Remarkably, the fetus seems so far to be unharmed, despite the cessation of your wife's vital activities. With your approval, we would like to continue to monitor its growth. There is a small chance we can provide the proper nutrients and simulate the role of the mother until the fetus becomes viable outside of the womb."
"Well," said Mrs. Blott, squeezing Peter's shoulder.
"Well, isn't that the sun just now coming through the clouds?"
Peter did not know how to be a father to a little girl. He showed up every day of those 13 months in hospital once I was freed from the corpse of his wife. But when they took me from the incubators, bundled me, and placed me in his arms to bring home, he was at a loss. We were lucky to have Mrs. Blott, who by the end of their first meeting had taken a vested interest in our plight, and who would check in on my father to be sure that first he, and then the two of us, were fed and cleaned and rested. Peter was not conventionally handsome, but there was something charming about his unkempt hair, the way his cheeks colored when he was excited. He had a way of blinking his hazel eyes and adjusting his glasses that inspired the women around him to take pity. I had, for lack of a better term, been born prematurely, and as such there existed an impenetrable medical bubble around me during my first few months of life. The nurses had worn gloves at all times. Even the small kisses Peter planted had been through layers of first incubator glass and then waffle-patterned blankets. Afraid their interventions might endanger my fledgling immune system, the doctors took no chances with their miracle, would not have me infected or exposed to human germs. Consequently, luck and science conspired to hide my true affliction until I was safely at home. Not until Mrs. Blott laid me on my back to show Peter how to refasten my diaper did it happen. She'd unpinned the one side and was starting on the second when her bare fingers brushed against my thigh. She froze, suddenly, and swayed to the side. I continued gurgling and kicking. Peter, eager pupil that he was, blinked at us both for a moment before stepping in to catch her.